Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration. Collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Carlin Moulton and Michelle Hoser, and we talk about their new film, Sponsorland. It's about new Canadians, Syrians, coming into this country and how a community, how Prince Edward County came around this family in a way that is really quite remarkable and so deeply relational and so rooted in a sense of generosity and grace and community that is really something to see. And so not only do I hope you listen to this fun and interesting interview, but I really do hope you get to see the film. It's on TVO. Check it out, Sponsorland. This is a film about Syria. It's about war. It's about relationships. It's about fear and acclimatization. It's about relationships and about family and about how they should be able to fit in a van. Kind of interesting and kind of fun. You'll find out more what that's all about. It's about banding together and about how, you know, coming alongside a family like this and diving into something like this is absolutely about philanthropy, and it's about volunteerism and all those things, but how raising the money for something like this is often the easy part. This film is about having a can-do attitude and kind of redefines what it means to, you know, the whole notion of it takes a village to do something, something not only that's remarkable, but that it's actually making a significant difference in so many lives. So please do listen in and absolutely see the film Sponsorland on TVO. Once again, that's TVO.org. Don't forget DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my speaking and my writing. And of course, face2facelive.ca for a host of interviews. And we're coming up on 350, believe it or not. And don't forget patreon.com if you want to come alongside and help to help me build what I'm doing here with Face to Face as I continue to create these interviews and reach out to new and exciting guests. So thank you for listening. And coming right up, Carlin Moulton and Michelle Hoser, Sponsorland.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here today to talk about a new film, TVO presenting and The Cutting Factory presenting a new film called Sponsorland. We have Michelle Hoser and Carlin Moulton here with us today. Thank you to both of you for joining me.
Thank you, David.
So why don't we just dive right in, Carlin? We're gonna get to you in a second because you without you, this film and this story, I don't think would have been possible. But Michelle, can you give us a little bit of an overview of what we're talking about? What exactly is Sponsorland all about?
Sponsor Land was commissioned by TV Ontario for the 150th Canada's 150th special programming, and they were looking for films that really explore the idea of Canadians having sort of dual identities, or as they would say, one foot in two different cultures. And at the time of their nationwide call, we were in the midst of the Syrian crisis, and Canadians had to open up their doors and hearts to thousands of refugees. And I thought, what a great way to look at this theme, and look also at how Canadians and this special program that we have of this private sponsorship group.
You were able to put this story together in a really short time frame, it seems to me. Was there any was that liberating for you as a filmmaker, or was that problematic?
I don't know how short it was. I think all in all, I mean, the call was done in 2015.
Yeah.
At this time, and then I met Carlin in March of 2016, and I think the first time we rolled was in May 2016, and I think we started in May, and the last shoot we did was in September of this year, so it's about a year and a half of just hanging with Carlin and her group and then the family in Prince Edward County, film chronicling, you know, how this family of 11 kids settled in Picton and in Prince Edward County.
So, Carlin, I'm really interested, and in I think it comes out a little bit in the film, and certainly your passion and your commitment to not only the family but the cause, and to, you know, your grace and your generosity around the whole initiative. It comes through in a variety of ways. But what would you say was the compelling factor for you personally to get involved, to bring this group together? Really, you had such incredible community support. I was blown away by that.
So was I. I have to say that I wasn't dedicated to the cause.
Interesting.
I was at the outset.
Right.
I wasn't someone who had been involved a great deal in you know, too many refugee related issues. Although many years ago I was involved, I guess, as a friendship family or a sponsor for a Cambodian family.
Oh.
And I had worked, I guess, 25 years ago or 30 years ago with a Russian Jewish family that had come to Toronto that had needed some support. But really, I haven't been very involved. What happened was, though, that, of course, as these, you know, dominantly climate change and war-driven narratives of migration were piling up, you know, and I guess three years ago, it really started to accelerate. And, you know, these stories were there. Most of the time, you feel relatively powerless. You can send off a check to a humanitarian organization, you know, pick your cause, you know, Doctors Without Borders. You send something to the UNHCR or something. But, you know, apart from simply sending money, personally, I felt fairly impotent to do anything about many of these sorts of crises. I've got my life here in Canada. I've got my job. I've got my family. Lots of other things I'm doing. And there didn't seem to me to be much of an opportunity for personal engagement, except when I realized that there was this opportunity for sponsorship. And I thought, well, you know, there's something that we can do. At least there's this little thing that we can do. We can reach our hand out. We can't, you know, I'm not about to sort of go off to Italy and stand on the shores with my hand out helping to pull people out of boats.
Right.
That's not available to me as an option, really. But this was something that I could do. And it didn't seem to me to be that much. At the outset,
it seemed to be
a fairly modest endeavor to say, okay, we can get a group of people together, raise some money, and sponsor some people for a year. There was, I will admit to some naivety about the scale of our undertaking, and I think that when we had the first meeting, you know, I had just put out a little post on Facebook. I didn't know how many people would show up. It might be 5 or 10 friends,
right.
And 110 people.
I love it. It's fabulous.
So, and what was interesting to me was that within an hour, We were organized into eight committee groups.
Wow.
You know, and the health team was led by a doctor. The education team was led by a retired high school principal. We had mental health teams. We had housing teams. We had fundraising teams, communications. We had all of the different working groups that we needed all sorted out. And we had raised $40,000 in an hour. It was
wow.
like, okay, we're done here. We've got our committees, got our people, got our expert groups. You couldn't have asked for a better group of volunteers. I mean, they were as qualified as if they had applied for the job with a CV in hand. And we were off to the races. But then what happened almost immediately, like the next week, because I had reached out to Ryerson Lifeline Syria to
okay.
see if we could be a part of their group. I'd heard about them and wondered if we could be one of their sponsor groups. Mostly because it would allow our donors to get tax receipts, frankly. It made it easier for people to make donations. And when they said, yes, you can be a part of our group, but then about a week later, they called me back and said, would you be ready to take a family?
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's just incredibly fast.
Yes.
And then they said, would you be willing to take a family of 14?
it's great.
And that was pretty jaw-dropping.
I bet.
I think mostly when you think about sponsoring a family, I don't know, what do you think of when you think,
I think
there's a family?
Four or six, maybe?
They fit in a van.
That's right, they fit in
That'd
a van.
That'd be my definition.
Yes.
Of a,
in one van.
In one van.
That's right.
That would be my definition.
Not a convoy.
They fit in a van. And
that's funny.
Suddenly, the logistics of managing all the considerations and concerns for a family that has 14 members, everything from, you know, housing, transportation, how do you pick them up at the airport?
Mm.
I mean, really, this was, we had to organize a giant passenger, you know, bus from Franklin. We had, you know, but to find housing was the big problem, and that's why Ryerson approached us, actually, was because they couldn't find housing for this family in Toronto.
How I'm fascinated and affirmed and encouraged by the amount of energy. Frankly, I think you guys need to figure out what to do with the UN. I may think maybe we should just commission Prince Edward County with fixing the UN. If you guys can do that in an hour, eight committee groups, you know, 40K raised. I think there's you know, talk about incremental change. You guys clearly made it happen. Passion in the community, a commitment. And I'd love to hear your voice in on this too, Michelle. What were you tapping into? Is it just this really generous community? This, you know, this is this Canadian? I'm really interested to hear more about that.
For me, you know, the interesting thing is you do talk to a lot of sponsor groups, and in Prince Edward County, they do have a very can-do attitude.
Mm, nice.
And I think if you talk to sponsors, they'll say the first thing is that raising the money is the easy part.
Right.
I don't know, Carlin, if you agree.
Simplest part, absolutely.
It's the easy part, but then it's the everyday commitment that this group, and look, we're 2 years into the families had their two-year anniversary last week, and the Carlin, again, tell me if I'm wrong, but the group is just as committed and just as there as from the first day. And I think it's the amount of work that the sponsors have done over the last couple of years, especially on a family so big. And one of the interesting reasons we looked at Prince Edward County is because it's not in a large city.
Right.
It's not like, you know, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, when there's all these support systems and government systems and even transit. You know, as Carlin says, how do you transport a family of 14? I mean, just taking them to the skating rink, you need at least three cars or
right.
at least, you know,
sure.
or shuttling back and forth. So for me, that was the interesting, how does that work in terms of organizing and logistics? And again, raising the money is easy. It's then the commitment. It's then the patience and figuring it out. And you know, I often say it's like a bit of a marriage. There you are. You have to have patience. You have to listen. There's expectations. In order to tell the story, I sort of had to get embedded in the community.
You're right.
And And
you lived in the community, didn't you, for about a year?
Yeah, in the beginning I rented a home and I was back and forth and I got tired of riding that 401 all the time.
I bet you did, yeah.
Yeah, and then finally in January I told my husband, all right, let's, you know, grab the dog. And when we stayed from January to July, and of course Prince Edward County is a great community to spend that much time there. So like we were very lucky. But we got to see, you know, one of the reasons is to gain the trust mm-hmm. of the community of Prince Edward County. You know, here I am, a filmmaker from Toronto, and it's like, who are you? So they're learning the county ways. It's getting to know people, getting to know the family, and, you know, getting to know the family is you end up doing what the volunteers do. You do a little bit of babysitting. You do a little bit of chauffeuring. You know, you become a bit of a confidant, and I realized the amount of commitment that the volunteers had put in. And it's constant, and it's in the middle mm-hmm. of the night, and it's on weekends.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, given the rural setting, is that they still pull through, you know. They figured it out, and I thought that was amazing.
I want to return to one of your earlier questions, if I might.
Sure, yeah.
So you asked the question, you know, is Prince Edward County different than other places, or is this just the Canadian response?
Sure, yep.
I moved to the county in 2004, so, I don't have three generations of relatives buried here, so I have to be careful attempting to speak on behalf of the community. But I have lived here for 14 years. And
you came out of Toronto, right, Carlin?
I did, yeah. And I have a pretty good sense of it. Michelle's right that there's a very can-do attitude that I think, though, is quite typical of rural Ontario, which is where I grew up, or rural Canada anywhere. There aren't a lot of people here. There aren't a lot of agencies to rely on. And so if you need something fixed or if you want something changed, there typically isn't a number to call.
Right.
You have to go and actually do it or find a few of your friends who can. And so banding together to create networks of people is nothing new here or in neighboring towns, I have to say. But I do think that in some respects, my initial ask for people who might be interested came out in August, and that was ahead of Alain Curdy being those terrible pictures of, you know, the children being washed up on
right.
the shore. But that happened in between.
Oh, okay.
Mm. And so when that happened, I think there wasn't a dry eye in the country. I think it's fair to say that everyone was profoundly moved somehow by that image that was iconic, was a representative image of the tragedy that was unfolding, and everybody wanted to do something. So it didn't matter who we asked at that point for any kind of help. It didn't matter if we were asking somebody for help with a donated van or a donated, mostly donated house or furniture, or even, you know, we called up Franklin, the bus company, to say, would you donate a bus for us to go and pick up this family? And they said, yes, we've been wondering what we could do.
Well,
happy to help. So happy
great.
To help. And thankful, you know, they all said, I'm glad there's something we can do. And I think it made everyone feel a little less powerless, a little less impotent. I don't think, some people have said, oh, well, you know, people just wanted to do good. I think it's different than that. I think the tragedy and the scope and scale of it was so great that to feel like there was any small thing you could do to alleviate it for, you know, maybe an individual, maybe a single family, that felt better than nothing. And so no one said no, basically. And so when we asked the municipality to support our effort, they said yes. When we asked local charities to support the effort, they said yes. When we raised almost $300,000 in the first 4 months of our existence in a very small community.
It just shows you what a committed, passionate group of people can do.
And as it's not really explored terribly fully in the film, but it's certainly part of the film, you know, the minute that the family, first family, arrived in all of their numbers, sort of shortly after, you know, being assured that we weren't going to harm them and that we were there
right,
to help,
right.
which was a concern, the next question was, and what about my brother?
Right.
What about my sister? What about my cousin? And although, you know, so a very large extended family with many, many parent-led groups, but who were all extended family, had migrated from Syria to Lebanon, but they were all living still together in Lebanon. And here's this family that got plucked out of the group and, mm-hmm. and sent first to another country. And they were sent first because they had health issues that were urgent.
Right.
The grandmother was palliative and obviously in need of some kind of palliative care. The mother was having some health issues that needed urgent attention. And there was also a child that had some health issues that needed attention. So other countries say no to families with health issues. Canada says, yes, we'll take them. That is a huge difference in sponsorship between Canada and other countries. So we will take people with health issues.
Right.
They, get accelerated. Mm-hmm. So that first family came, and then it was, what about all the other families? And so immediately we realized our credibility, our relationship with this family, had a whole lot to do with our willingness to take on the next sibling and the next sibling and the next sibling, and I really don't know where that would ever end.
Well, and Michelle, you really bring that out well in the film, too, the tension with I'm not sure if it was Sliman or Ramez, but one of the sons who's talking about how some of his friends have kind of stopped talking
yeah.
to him. And
yeah,
there's this sense of maybe guilt or shame that why was I chosen, and the sense that that same powerlessness now, I can't bring my friends over. I can't bring the rest of my family over.
Yeah, that's interesting from Sliman. He has a cousin also named Sliman who he told me he doesn't talk to us much anymore. In fact, I don't even think he does talk to him because, you know, here he is. In a land of opportunity. He's got school, he's got work, he's got things going, and his friend is stuck in Lebanon doing hard labor with not much of future. And he has a hard time reconciling that, and he knows he can't bring him here right away. And so it weighed on him. And then he'll ask his friends, why aren't you calling? You know, why aren't we talking? And they sort of said, well, we lost the will to speak. And that was hard on him. And of course there's WhatsApp and there's Facebook.
Right.
So there is this constant continuing dialogue, which I think must have put pressure on Carlin and the group to bring in more family. But I think what's interesting in bringing more of the extended family, I think we'll also maybe help guarantee the success of bringing families in rural settings so that they have their extended family.
Right,
beside
right,
them.
Sure.
Right, which is really important. All of a sudden, okay, now we can really set roots because my sister's here, my brother's here, we're growing into a community, and I think that is great in that sense in terms of, you know, means more volunteers, and more organization, but it does allow the success of this sponsorship group in rural Canada.
Yes, go ahead.
So I think that the model of this sponsorship group is quite different from other sponsorship groups that I am aware of, and I've talked to different people across the country. Typically, a sponsor group is taking on a family. And what we did is we set up an organization that had an umbrella organization, which we call PEC Syria. And there are people who are, okay, they're doing fundraising. There are the people who are doing mental health-related issues or health-related things or working out, navigating with the schools. But those are umbrella people for, now we have 7 pods, as we call them internally, 7 internal groups of people each one, each of those groups is dedicated to a specific individual nuclear family, but there is this umbrella organization. So we were able to scale fairly easily. And so in actual fact, with each successive family that's come, it's been less and less work
right.
for us, because the people that are already here that they are related to, you know, I did not go deliberately to the airport with Michelle to meet her spouse and sister when she came. First of all, there's a pod lead there that, you know, really I wanted them to imprint on or to develop that initial relationship with that pod. Not, I can't be spread amongst all of them in that sense. And so, but the family, her brothers and her sister went to greet her. And the first night she spent was at her sister's home. She'd been up all night preparing for her sister's arrival. That's a very different welcome than walking through the door to a
right.
gaggle of strangers.
Sure.
So it's become much easier as this progresses in some respects.
So Carlin, and Michelle, I'd love to hear it, but either of you, did you guys do the, I mean, this may seem like a really silly question, but did you do the right thing? And then maybe the follow-up is, would you do it? Well, clearly you would do it again. But you talked about those good intentions out of the gate, and you talked about how, you know, you weren't necessarily a willing participant. But wow.
I didn't say that. obviously, I was a willing participant. I put my hand up. It's just that I haven't spent my life dedicated to refugee-related causes.
Right.
But in this particular moment in history, it seemed I was blessed enough to be able to offer something. I carved out some time. I was able, there was a mechanism that the government had structured where we could actually, as human beings, citizens of this country, we could do something that no other citizens of any other country could do. We're the only country with private citizen sponsorship. I think that's worth noting.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, absolutely.
So it gave us something that we could do. And do I regret it? Not for a second. Would I do it again? Absolutely. Has it been different than I anticipated? Sure.
Yeah.
Have I learned a lot of things from the experience that would cause me to maybe approach some of it differently? Absolutely. But anything that's worth doing is worth doing. So I just think that the biggest frustration in this entire enterprise is that the momentum that the government helped to create at the outset by saying, we're going to put this push on, we're going to bring
right.
these people in, we're going to get these 25, then 40,000 people here. They galvanized the country. Every town mobilized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, small towns from sea to shining sea got together in church basements and raised money and found a place and kind of got ready to receive a family. That happened across the country. And then most of those people, most of them, have been frustrated and left dangling, unable to now get a family because there is nobody there to process the applications,
right.
basically.
Yeah, that's
and so
right.
They built that momentum. There was this outpouring of goodwill and energy. And honestly, it's turned to something kind of bitter and resentful because there was no way then that they could act.
How did you guys? And it comes out in, I think it comes out in the film. And I mean, it really does seem like you've done this many, many times before. You know, the Michelle, the way the community that sort of develops, the way the second family like nature of it all. I think one of your sponsors says, you know, what my family says, where, you know, this has become your second family. You're spending, you know, the implication being you're almost spending as much time there as you are. You're with them as you are with us, sort of a thing. But
yeah.
how did you guys go about breaking down those cultural barriers? The maybe moment, you know, you talk a little bit about that in the film, some of those uncomfortable moments. Of course you've got language, but there's so many others. Those that moment in the kitchen is just absolutely wonderful, Michelle, with I forget who it is, but one of the sons and mom and the cooking of the food and him talking how he wants to marry a Canadian girl. It's just wonderful, right?
That's a great scene.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting because there was that language barrier
mm-hmm.
And one of the things I had to do in order to gain the trust was sort of drop the traditional documentary crew and just hang out with the family.
Right.
And in fact, my cinematographer, John Ming Trin, one of the best in the country, I said, John, just give me, outfit me with a camera, give me, you know, cinematography 101.
Right.
And in fact, I did two or three sessions with him because I realized, okay, I better do this properly, you know, at least learn the autofocus button.
Right. Probably a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but in the beginning, I sort of had to hang back with the camera just to allow things to happen. And luckily, Sleeman was wearing a mic at the time. And I'll tell you, I was so grateful for that kitchen opening where I could be a little bit removed and catch what was going on. And, you know, in the beginning, yeah, it's a language barrier. We had some great translators with us. But, yeah, you know, at one point, just spending so much time, you know, or they look and you go, there you are again with the camera. Oh, okay, it's you again.
Right.
But after a while, you know, when we were just hanging out with them, I would have South Sun, the mom, say, okay, take out your camera, Michelle. Let's film this. And I don't know if you remember the scene of the kids doing karate in front of the parents.
Yes,
and
yeah, wonderful scene, yeah.
Lovely family moment where they're all there. South Sun had said to me, okay, Michelle, take out your camera. And I thought, okay, you just don't know these things are going to end up in the film.
Sure.
Said, okay, home video, but I think it just shows just an intimacy amongst them. You know, they're not watching television. They're there watching each other, right? And when you have such a large family, you get a lot of entertainment amongst yourselves. And I think that took a while. And I'm sort of lucky. My parents are Egyptian Jews. In fact, my grandmother was born in Syria. And my parents spoke Arabic at home, so I'm used to the language. And in fact, unfortunately, it was a language they kept for themselves, trying to get the kids not to, so that the kids wouldn't understand what they're saying. And of course, you pick up the language, and the first thing you do is you pick up the swear words. And when I walked into South and Abdul Malik's home, the language was familiar to me. And the intonation was familiar, so I didn't feel like a total stranger. And of course, the food was the same, so I felt like almost, you know, like I was there with my extended family. It's a very interesting feeling. Gaining all that trust took a long time. Took a real long time.
Can you talk a little bit? We're going to have to wrap it up in a couple of minutes. I can't believe how fast the time's gone.
Oh, my God. I agree.
I know, it's ridiculous. So I think we might have to do a part two. And by the way, way too long for me to get to this point. Congratulations on the film. And I know it just aired in Toronto, and it's a TVO production. So I'm hoping it's going to be available for people in sort of perpetuity. I mean, everybody needs to see this film for so many different reasons, it seems to me. But can you talk a little bit, as we sort of come to a close here, about some of the difficulties, that anti-Muslim sentiment? I mean, the attack in Quebec City, the potential for racist commentary or things that might have happened in the community that maybe didn't make
it
into the film.
That.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit about that. I mean, it's a really hopeful film, and I think it really speaks to anyone who says this can't work, or immigration's a bad idea, or, you know, let's just look south, and it's easy to get sanctimonious as Canadians, I suppose, but look at what's going on in the U.S. and all that's wrong with that, you know, you kind of want to go, hey, let's get everybody into one big theater.
There's no question that there's a kind of, because of our juxtaposition with the United States, and, you know, the constant mayhem of mass shootings and the sort of very out loud racist sentiments that are being expressed there, there's no question that in contrast to them, we can sometimes feel very smug and we can feel very supercilious in a way, right? Because we're not them.
Right,
and by comparison, we're a much kinder, gentler, more accepting, multicultural society. Now, in fact, we are, and we're a less violent society, although I just recently read a very interesting analysis which says, you know, it's really correlated to how many guns you have. It's not really about how many races you have or you don't. It's about how armed you are.
Interesting.
I think that we, however, created a feeling for them that they arrived very afraid.
Hmm.
We spent a lot of time working with the individuals at the local mosque. There's a mosque in Belleville. And they were with us when we welcomed the family on day one. We spent a lot of time trying to make sure that we had a broad cross-section of our community saying, we welcome you and we embrace you no matter what your faith. And there's no question that when that shooting happened, it caused everybody to go back on their heels, right? It was
right.
An abrupt moment when suddenly everyone went, they went, this can happen in Canada, you know, we've just been hearing that it doesn't.
It doesn't happen, yeah.
It doesn't happen, that you're not opposed to us, that you will accept us, and then this happens. And then Ramis says, we can't look at the actions of one guy.
Right, yeah.
And say, that's what Canadians
are. Profoundly wise, yes.
This is one guy.
Yeah.
But what then happened, I think, to reinforce that, was something that's never happened here before, was there was a march. Now, there are lots of marches in Toronto. Toronto gets a march every week about something. There aren't a lot of marches in Belleville.
Really?
Not many. And also, this was, I think, February. It was really terribly cold.
Yeah, minus 30 or
something. Oh,
that,
yeah.
That particular night was minus 25 or 30 or
something. I wondered what the candles were for. Yeah.
Oh, I wish I had had one. They ran out. And it was very, very cold.
Yeah.
And over 2,000 people, which
wow.
is a lot in this town, came out to march arm in arm, starting at the local mosque and marching through downtown to City Hall to say, we stand with you and we oppose this. And I know that there were vigils in many cities across the country, but it really struck me in Belleville that that happened. When, you know, I've lived in this community for as many years as I have, and I'd never been to the local mosque. I didn't know anybody at the local mosque until 2 years ago.
Mm.
And now we were all marching arm in arm and knew each other by
so
first name,
yep.
except for the extraordinarily winter gear that we all had on. We could hardly tell who was who underneath our hats and scarves. But it was quite a, I think it said a lot to Ramez and to his family, that we all went there and marched. And blessedly, that hasn't happened again. And they seem to have recognized it as a unique event rather than part of their daily experience.
Michelle, I've got sadly, a final question for you, and then I think we'll have to wrap it up. What, I mean, you've been making doc films for quite a while. You've been involved in some pretty interesting award-winning films, and What do you come away with from this experience that's maybe different than some of the other films that you've shot in the past? You know, I mean, I love doc film. I mean, I honestly, at the risk of sounding a little idealistic and a little corny, I feel like I'm a better person because I saw this, because I became a part of this story, because I've learned about this. Like you say, Carl, and I've never been in a mosque up until that time. I mean, these, you know, you get to go places that you would never go. How about you as a director, as a producer, as the filmmaker?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. That, you know, every time you start a new doc, you feel like you're going back to university and learning on the subject, and you think you come into it with certain, you know, ideas and expectations, and you come out of it with completely different idea.
Mm.
I think the interesting thing, you know, just to go on what you were talking about with the attack in the mosque, at the time in 2015 when we started this project, you know, it was the time of the election. There was part of Canadians, sadly, who weren't sure, should we let them in?
Right.
Is this a great idea? And, you know, we elected a Liberal government. We went forth and brought in thousands of refugees. But those voices who were skeptical are still out there.
Sure, of course.
And so for me, okay, let's look at this sponsorship program, you know, beyond the 30 second news clip, and what do we learn? And, you know, you get a lot of people asking you, so as a filmmaker, what's your take? You know, will they integrate? And you feel like saying, oh, my God, they're like just you and I. They're a normal family.
Yeah.
They're infectious. They love their kids. They want their future.
Well, and this is what's so important about your film, right? That helping to break those kind of barriers down.
And that fear of other. Really,
yes,
you know,
absolutely.
And the unknown. And I think for me that was the really important question.
Well, there's a similarity through difference, right? And I think
exactly.
This is what is so beautiful about Canada, or at least what we hope is beautiful about Canada. And I think it is. and it makes us kind of proud to be Canadians. And I got that sense too from the family that they were genuinely thrilled ultimately once they got over that fear to be a part of this smaller community, and you bring that out beautifully too with is it Ramez's trip to Toronto on the train and so on, and just that contrast, right?
If I'm not pushing your time too
no
much,
please
can
go
I make another
of course you can book. Yeah, absolutely,
because I grew up in a rural Ontario farming family, and you know, my parents ended up having other jobs off the farm, you know, where they were doing other things. But my grandparents didn't. And what they remind me of, what this family reminds me of, is my grandparents.
Mm.
In the sense that they were used to growing their own food. They you know, my grandmother had food and store-bought food. And we hardly ever got store-bought food. So, and for this family, they were used to growing their own food, making their own food. They don't go out to restaurants.
Right.
That's not even
no.
a part of their their repertoire, right? The boys may go and get a slice of pizza, but the family doesn't do that.
Sure.
The parents, you know, in our current generation, we're all very work-focused. And it's like, well, we've got our job and we do that, and what are we going to do about the kids? You know, and then we make our child care arrangements. They're approaching this completely differently. Mm. We have our kids. And then what are we going to do about work? You know, so they're coming at it in a way that's reminded me very much of my grandparents, where they were at home. The kids just kind of got integrated into what they were doing. They didn't make a special deal about doing something with the kids for the kids. There was life, and the kids kind of went with the flow of it. And
nice.
They were always underfoot, and it didn't matter how many of them there were, and the more the merrier. And whereas we've come a quite a distance from that, in my experience, in certain cultures, you know, certain parts of our culture, certain kinds of families, where our families have gotten smaller. Lots of people don't have children, something inconceivable in my grandparents' day, for example. And, you know, for me to spend time with Sousan and have her say, yeah, I've got 11 kids, but I would like more.
That's right.
You know,
yes. Yeah.
It just set me, you know, you go, what? Really? Can you believe that?
Yeah.
But she's genuine. And their mm-hmm. love and affection for what they consider to be their wealth.
Yes.
Which is their children.
Yes, yeah.
Right? And I don't know that we think about our children necessarily as our wealth. And our first priority. And so it's been an interesting, I think, very educational experience for us to be forced to listen to that voice again.
Well, I really am a better person for seeing the film, and thank you to you both. Carlin, thank you for what you've done and how you've brought this community together and were willing to share it into the family as well. And Michelle, for the film. What a great conversation today. We've been talking about Sponsorland with Carlin Moulton and Michelle Hoser. TVO production going to be, Michelle, just before we wrap, going to be on TVO?
It's going to be on TVO November 15th,
okay.
With repeat broadcast during that week, I think even on November 18th. And then following that, they can look at sponsorland.ca, and it will be streaming there. And we also hope to take the film on the road to different communities across Canada.
Because
it's always special to watch screenings and then have Q&As after and have the discussion just continue on.
Yeah, well, I wish you well with that, and I hope you get into many communities across Canada. You've made it an important and a beautiful film. Thank you for that.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David, for the question. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.